Primaries are in full swing for the 2018 midterms, and one of the biggest issues for Democrats is whether to make the impeachment of Donald Trump a central issue of the party's platform. In a mid-April NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll, 70% of Democratic registered voters said they would definitely vote for a congressional candidate who wants to move to impeach Trump. And only 18% of Democratic voters said they would definitely vote against the candidate. New Yorker staff writer Jeffrey Toobin explores what impeachment might mean for Democrats in the midterms. His story, entitled "Will the Fervor to Impeach Donald Trump Start a Democratic Civil War?" appears in the May 28th issue of The New Yorker, and I am very pleased it brings Jeffrey to our show. Welcome.
Hi, DW.
So, you know, I have to confess, I've watched your reaction as a legal analyst on CNN to what feels like thousands of infractions by this administration of both the customs of American politics and the Constitution. Does it feel like you can still be surprised by this administration and its brazenness?
Maybe it's naivete, maybe I just am kind of dumb, but I'm surprised every day. I'm amazed every day of the stuff that goes on. I mean, the violations of norms, the lying, the racism, the nastiness is remains shocking to me, and I think should stay shocking, but what the implication of it all is something that is much harder for me to guess at.
Right, and so in terms of the implications, in terms of the impeachment question itself, if there was a majority of Democrats in the House, isn't it the case that there is enough evidence to bring obstruction of justice charges against the president?
Well, let's start with the premise that the only possibility for impeachment even being considered by the House of Representatives is if the Democrats retake the House in the midterm elections. If the Democrats don't, this is all completely moot. As for is there enough evidence, you know, it's important to point out that impeachment is always been and remains as much a political judgment as it is a legal judgment. So when you say, is there enough evidence, you are talking about judgments to be made by members of the House of Representatives who will always look at the evidence through a political lens. That's not a criticism. I think that's just a fact. I mean, at the moment, I think there is a substantial group of Democratic members of the House of Representatives who think there is enough evidence to impeach the president. But they are not even a majority of Democrats at this point. There have been a couple of votes. I mean, most people don't know this, that, you know, early this year and late last year, a congressman named Al Green from Texas brought up impeachment resolutions, and one of them got 58 votes and one of them got 66 votes, which I think is a pretty good sense of where the Democratic caucus is right now in terms of impeachment. It's about a third of the Democrats. It's not nothing, but it's a long way from a majority.
Right, and you opened the piece with Al Green and those two votes that he spurred. What prompted him to first propose the articles of impeachment?
Well, the turning point for him, he says, was the firing of James Comey, which remains, I think, the central piece of evidence in an obstruction of justice charge against the president. I mean, the idea that Donald Trump fired James Comey to interfere with the investigation of Donald Trump, and there's a lot of evidence for that, that remains very strong evidence of obstruction of justice. And I think that is what prompted Green to start writing his first motion in May of 2017. What really sealed the deal for him, and I think what sealed the deal for a lot of the other Democrats who support impeachment, it was the president's reaction to the events in Charlottesville, the way he equated the neo-Nazis
right,
with the anti-racism protesters. That was a turning point that I think had a big impact on a lot of people in Congress. So I think those two events were really the signal events.
And that that second event that you just referenced, that was what spurred Green to put forward the articles of impeachment for the second time, right?
Actually, the vote came at the first vote came after the references to the second vote. Actually, it was when Trump referred to the S-hole countries.
Right.
I can't
okay.
say it, and WNYC's tender ears,
thank
the
you.
Listeners. It was. The Charlottesville that prompted the first vote, and it was the disparagement of the majority black nations that prompted the second vote.
So, you know, there seems to be twists and turns almost on a daily basis with this story. And over the last couple of days, we've seen reporting that the president asked Attorney General Sessions to sort of reinsert himself or withdraw his recusal from the investigation. What does it mean that Trump has returned to his war on Jeff Sessions? How do you read that?
Well, I think you know, this has been a constant of the president's behavior since Sessions recused himself, allowing Rod Rosenstein to take over the investigation and thus appoint Robert Mueller as special counsel. I mean, this has been a deep and abiding obsession and source of anger for the president. That has not yielded. I think in recent days, or certainly in recent months, particularly since Rudy Giuliani has come on as sort of chief lawyer and chief spokesman, it's been much more of a sort of impeachment-focused defense rather than a legal defense. I think the Trump camp believes, and I think they're correct about this, that Robert Mueller will honor the traditions of the Justice Department and decide that it is not permissible to indict a sitting president on criminal charges. So the only risk to the president is impeachment. And what Trump appears to be doing in response to that threat is rallying the base, is saying, you know, this the attacks on him are part of the deep state. Mueller is deeply compromised. There are all these Democrats who work for Mueller, that he is trying to politicize his dispute with Mueller, get it out of the legal arena into the political arena to guarantee that there will be no defections in an impeachment vote if it comes to that. Interestingly, I think it's not all that different from what Bill Clinton did when he was impeached. Is that he basically said the only risk to me is if there are Democratic defections, and he concentrated on preserving his base, which didn't work in the House because the House voted impeachment, but it certainly worked in the Senate.
I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Jeffrey Toobin about his article, Will the Fervor to Impeach Donald Trump Start a Democratic Civil War, for the May 28th issue of The New Yorker. So do you believe Jeff Sessions will be a witness for Mueller?
Mueller, yes.
Yeah, Mueller, sorry.
Yes, I do. I mean, again, when you talk about a witness for Mueller, it's not clear there will ever be any legal proceeding or even political proceeding where these people testify in public. And again, one of the mysteries about this whole situation is how Mueller's investigation will conclude. Will he write a report? Will it be released in public? I mean, I think most of us assume that he will write a report, but the legal frame under which Mueller operates is not that clear. And he has to report to the person who appointed him, who was Rod Rosenstein, but Rosenstein is not obliged to make that public. There will certainly be a lot of pressure for him to make that public, but he will certainly. So when you talk about will Sessions be a witness, I mean, he will probably be referred to because he's been interviewed by Mueller at least once. And I think that.
The question is preempted by these other political considerations that you've highlighted for us. Nancy Pelosi has been opposed to making impeachment any part of the Democratic platform in 2018. Why is that?
Well, I think the experience of the Clinton impeachment hangs heavy over the political atmosphere today regarding impeachment. It is generally believed by the political class of both parties in Washington that impeachment was a disaster for the Republicans in 1998, that it was perceived as a partisan enterprise. It was perceived as doing a political vendetta, not doing the public's business. And the conventional wisdom in Washington is that impeachment has to be at least somewhat of a bipartisan enterprise to be political success. You know, the fact that by the end of the House impeachment proceedings against Richard Nixon in 1974, the fact that seven Republicans voted in favor of impeachment in the Judiciary Committee was a sign that that this was a worthwhile apolitical enterprise. The fact that no Democrats joined in the impeachment against Bill Clinton created the impression that this was just a partisan enterprise to get Clinton, and Pelosi is worried about the Democrats of 2018 and 2019 as being seen as more concerned about, you know, getting Donald Trump than doing the public's business. And that is a view widely shared among elected officials in Washington of both parties.
And as we've highlighted, everything in an impeachment proceeding would start in the House. But is your sense that Chuck Schumer is on the same page as Nancy Pelosi?
Very much. I mean, you know, for people who are not up on their constitutional law, the House of Representatives can impeach the president by a majority vote, and Bill Clinton was impeached. But to remove a president from office, it takes two-thirds plus one of the Senate, which means 67 votes. I don't think anyone believes, based on the evidence that's available now, there is any chance in the world that there are 67 votes to remove Donald Trump from office in the Senate. And many Democrats believe that in light of that reality, that there is no chance of him being removed from office, the whole enterprise would be a waste of time.
So, you know, you've underscored this important point about the tradition of not indicting a sitting president, but with the FBI agents' raids on the offices of Michael Cohen and the recent articles hinting at money laundering, bank fraud, and a whole host of other crimes, isn't it possible that impeachment is the least of Trump's worries in the long run?
You know, I like to focus on sort of what the evidence is that we can see. And, you know, people, you know, have been talking about Donald Trump and money laundering and all sorts of frauds and crimes. I haven't seen any evidence of that. And you know, yes, it is deeply worrying to Trump, and he's certainly very angry about the raid of Michael Cohen's office. And there may be incriminating material there, but I haven't seen it. And so, you know, I think it's better to focus on what is actually the evidence that is actually we can see rather than what we could speculate about. And I don't think at the moment, at least, Donald Trump is worried about being prosecuted either before, during or after his presidency based on the evidence that's out there.
Well, you mentioned Rudy Giuliani earlier, and it seems like there's been a series of headlines where he, you know, has made big comments that have created large headlines, boldface headlines. Do you have a sense that there's a game plan in all of that, or do you really think it's sort of as fumbly as it seems?
Well, I think it's clear that it's pretty fumbly, and that Giuliani is not, you know, a disciplined public speaker. But I think he's doing what Trump wants to do. He's trashing Mueller at every opportunity. He is portraying this investigation as a partisan witch hunt, you know, witch hunt being the operative phrase that Trump has assigned to this. And it's worked with Republicans. Mueller's approval, Mueller's popularity has declined dramatically since he was appointed among self-described Republicans. And that, I think, is a hedge against impeachment. You know, I think, you know, by the degraded standards of our current civil discourse, you know, the fact that that Giuliani is repeating some of the falsehoods that Trump has said about the Mueller's investigation, like, you know, is, I mean, it's too bad. I wish the system, you know, didn't allow for, you know, the system didn't reward that kind of behavior. But, you know, I'm long since past, you know, being surprised by it. I think, you know, Trump is determined to trash Giuliani, to trash Mueller. Virtually everything, every criticism that Trump and his allies have made, and that includes those that Giuliani have made, have turned out to be baseless, including, you know, what he said most recently about, you know, the so-called spy in the camp, which is just a ridiculous assertion. I mean, it's this is where we are now, unfortunately, and it's not. But it works with his with Trump's base.
With the base, right? I'm speaking with New Yorker staff writer Jeffrey Toobin about his article, Will the Fervor to Impeach Donald Trump Start a Democratic Civil War? This is Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break. I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Jeffrey Toobin about his latest article for The New Yorker entitled, Will the Fervor to Impeach Donald Trump Start a Democratic Civil War? So, Jeffrey, you know, we've seen a lot of action in the primaries already, and that some prominent Democrats, such as Gavin Newsom out in California, primary coming up this next week, he's running for governor. He's made support for impeachment a major part of his platform, as have many others. Do we know what percentage of Democrats are ignoring the party leadership and just campaigning on impeachment? How widespread does that seem to you?
It's not that widespread yet. When asked, many Democrats will say they're in favor of impeachment, but I mean it is not an explicit part of that many campaigns. What's striking is when you ask the Democratic base, when you ask voters, they're for it in substantial numbers. It's interesting, you know, it's much more the voters who are speaking out in favor of impeachment. It's not the people who are running. You know, by one poll, 71% of Democrats favor impeaching impeaching President Trump, and that's a lot. And I think the real pressure will come if, in the event the Democrats retake the House, that this is something that really has bubbled up from below, in part stoked by the work of this billionaire Tom Steyer, who started broadcasting a lot of television commercials in favor of impeachment and is now traveling the country on a 30-city tour, holding rallies in favor of impeachment. He's by far the most public spokesman, but he has a lot of support in the base of the party.
Yeah, and tell us more about Steyer, because he, you know, he's a San Francisco billionaire, and he's almost become a household name since he started running these television advertisements, right?
It is a really sort of remarkable story about what you can buy in America. I mean,
right.
You know, he was a, you know, utterly obscure, very rich man in San Francisco, and he decided that what the country needed was him. And what's not clear is whether he is using impeachment as a wedge to inject himself into politics as a possible presidential candidate in 2020. He gives a sort of non-denial when I ask him about that. But, you know, he has just spent his way into a measure of real prominence in the party and in the country by identifying himself with the issue. But the thing that he realizes, and I think what makes this issue so interesting, is that the politicians, you know, Nancy Pelosi and her allies, are not really with their main constituents. I mean, their main constituents love to talk about impeachment.
Right.
Their party members, their activists, the base of the Democratic Party, loves to hear what Tom Steyer has to say. And that's the central conflict here. Nancy Pelosi says, you know, this will lead to disaster with moderates. It'll be a failure. And Steyer is saying, we stand for something. And this man is corrupt. This man is a liar. And that's why we have impeachment in this country. And it's not a simple resolution ahead, I think.
I mean, it's interesting because, yes, on the one hand, it is we stand for something. But on the other hand, it seems to echo the dynamics of 2016, where it was all about this man is terrible. I mean, isn't there a scenario where we can say the Democrats should be focused on tax cuts in the middle class and even single-payer health care?
You know, that's true, but... You know, that's sort of the worthy Washington consensus, that's what people should do. But, you know, if you talk to the voters, they hate Donald Trump. I'm talking about the Democratic voters.
Right.
They hate this guy. They are far more motivated by talking about how awful he is than they are by talking about single payer or talking about immigration or talking about tax policy. So, you know, yes, it is true that in an ideal world, perhaps voters would be primarily motivated by, the conventional political issues. But the hatred for Donald Trump is real and pervasive in the Democratic Party. And you know, Steyer is onto something. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad, but he is not. He's playing to full houses.
Right.
And it's not because Tom Steyer is such a compelling speaker or because he's a household name. He's neither of those things. But he is telling them something they want to hear.
Right. Well, as you laid out at the beginning, it's quite possible to still be shocked day in and day out by what's happening. You provide really good historic context in the piece. And you write, for roughly the first two centuries of the American Republic, there was an informal taboo on advocating for impeachment, even among a president's most outspoken critics. Why?
Well, if you go from, you know, the Constitution in 1787 until Nixon in 1974, there had only been one impeachment, and it was Andrew Johnson in 1868, where he was impeached by the House of Representatives, but the Senate failed by one vote to convict him. So he remained in office. And that was generally perceived historically as a bad moment for Congress, that Congress was really impeaching him over policy differences about the aftermath of the Civil War, not because he had actually committed high crimes and misdemeanors, which is the standard established in Article 2 of the Constitution. That Article 1, actually. There was this general belief that we pick our presidents at elections and not Congress, and that Congress needs to respect the judgments of the voters, and if we don't like presidents, we turn them out at the ballot box. So it was really almost 200 years before, I mean, it was 100 years after the first effort, 200 years after into the Constitution, that a president was actually forced from office. And you know, when Nixon was investigated for impeachment, you know, most people didn't even know how the procedure worked. It had been so long since it had been used. And, you know, one of the real tasks of the House Judiciary Committee under its chairman, Peter Rodino, and its chief counsel, John Doerr, was to explain to the members of Congress and to the public, you know, what does high crimes and misdemeanors mean? How does the procedure work? I mean, it had fallen so much into disuse. Now, of course, you know, we had Clinton in 98, and now, you know, 20 years later, we have, you know, substantial activity in support of impeachment. You know, so that's three times in 40 years after once in 200 years. And I think it's indicative of the partisan atmosphere in which we live that it's not enough to force out our political adversaries during elections. People want to force them out through impeachment. And it's not a coincidence that impeachment has become much more part of our political conversation today.
I'm D.W. Gibson, speaking with Jeffrey Toobin about his most recent article for The New Yorker, "Will the Fervor to Impeach Donald Trump Start a Democratic Civil War?" You spoke with Michael Gerhardt, a professor at the University of North Carolina School of Law, who said, and I quote, "Our partisan divisions now are not just sharp, but among the sharpest in American history. And these divisions are then taken out on the president with calls for impeachment, which is an extreme measure and appeals to people who have extreme positions." I'd love to get some thoughts from you on that. And to the question, are we really more divided now than when Abraham Lincoln was elected?
Well, no. I mean, we're not more divided than during the Civil War. People are not killing each other, and I'm very pleased to draw that distinction. But I think the perhaps more useful comparison is to the 1970s, when the Republican Party contained a lot of moderates. That, you know, whether it was in the Senate with people like Robert Stafford and Robert Packwood and Arlen Specter and Chuck Percy and the list went on and on of moderates and John Chafee in Rhode Island and all through New England. I mean, that's in the Senate, and there were equivalent people in the House. And I think the critical difference between the Republican Party of 1974 and the Republican Party of 2008 is that it was conceivable, and it happened, that seven members of the House Judiciary Committee, seven Republicans, joined with the Democrats in supporting impeachment. And it is, to me anyway, inconceivable that any Republicans who maintain the hope of winning Republican primaries, which after all is what it takes to get elected to the House or the Senate, would turn on Donald Trump in that way. I think the Republican Party has changed in such a dramatic way, more than the Democratic Party has changed, and that has made a push for impeachment more likely. But the idea of a successful impeachment, at least on a bipartisan basis, it's made it less likely because the parties are so polarized.
Past the primary season, perhaps past the midterm elections, can you see moderate voices in Congress, the likes of Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, sort of changing their tune?
Absolutely not. I don't see that at all. I mean, Lisa Murkowski already lost a Republican primary and had to get elected as a write-in.
Yeah.
Susan Collins is somewhat of an outcast in the Republican Party in Maine. That's why she didn't run for governor. So I don't see it.
Yeah.
I really don't, Jeff Flake is the one that we trot out on cable news all the time. But the whole point of Jeff Flake is that he's not running for re-election because he would lose a Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's the exception that proves the rule that you can't dissent from the Trump consensus and be a Republican today. And that's why I just don't think there will ever be a bipartisan impeachment of Donald Trump, barring evidence that, you know, is certainly not available now and is unlikely ever to be.
So we haven't talked about another area of the Trump administration, and that is his business interests and the degree to which he may be profiting off of his job as a president. Can you give us just a quick explanation of the Emoluments Clause and why the framers put it into the Constitution?
Well, in the early days of the Republic, you know, the United States was a pretty was a cash poor country, and its leaders were susceptible to bribery by foreign powers, and France and England were you know, they had lots of money that we didn't have, and the framers were worried about politicians being bought off. So they put in this provision that said emoluments is this strange word that sounds like suntan lotion. But it means, you know, a gift, things of value. And it basically says, presidents, among others, cannot receive things of value from foreign countries. And the argument that some have made and there's some lawsuits to this effect, is that Trump's maintaining his business interests, like his hotel near the White House, like his interests abroad, is a violation of the Emoluments Clause. That you know, when Kuwaitis stay in Washington, they stay in the Trump Hotel because they want to ingratiate themselves with the president. I don't really think these lawsuits and these arguments are really going anywhere, but I think it's indicative of how, under President Trump, we're dealing with a set of legal and political questions that we've never seen before.
Why don't you think they're going anywhere? Is that because you don't see credible evidence?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't think the Emoluments Clause was set up to deal with, you know, the Trump Hotel. I think what the president has done in failing to dissociate himself from his company is shabby and inappropriate and wrong. But I don't think it's a crime, and I don't think it's a high crime and misdemeanor, and I don't think it's a violation of the Emoluments Clause. But, you know, no one knows what is a violation of the Emoluments Clause because no one's ever really tested these issues before, except in really minor ways. But my own take on it is that it's not really going anywhere. Those lawsuits and are not really going anywhere. But we'll see.
I've been speaking with Jeffrey Toobin about his latest article for The New Yorker, Will the Fervor to Impeach Donald Trump Start a Democratic Civil War? Thank you so much for joining me today, Jeffrey.
Thank you, W.